At the end of Chips Avengers, we tried to find a chips wrap, which we couldn't do. But in between now and then, ChatGPT exists. So we are going to live ask it to make some bars and you will hear me rap. Is this the most embarrassing thing I've done on this podcast? Snoop Dogg in the house and I'm coming real snicks talking about semiconductors, baby, get with it. Silicon and germanium, they make my flow sick. Electrons moving like they supposed to, they don't miss. Drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot. Powering up my circuits, baby, make them voltage drop. So a month ago, we had the Chips Avengers. We're here now today with the Substack Semi Scrappers, Dylan Patel of Semi Analysis, Dodo Laughlin of Fabricated Knowledge, and yours truly, who also runs a Substack called Trying to Talk.media. I write things once, twice a week. You should all subscribe. I know some of you don't. Change that. Today, we are having a special edition year in review of semiconductors, a like countdown top 10 show as if we were debating, you know, your favorite movies or TV shows, except with chips news. So, Dylan, Doug, welcome to China Talk. By the way, they both host a podcast themselves called Transistor Radio, which you guys should all check out. Let's start from the bottom. Dylan, what made it on your list?
One of my top things that happened this year was what happened with Samsung in regards to their culture and their technology, right? So Samsung's been a leader in the industry. They've done this through, you know, making really big bets and following through and executing. Over the last few years, especially the culture of the company has continued the, you know, let's make big bets. And they followed through, but they haven't been able to execute. Now, these decisions might have not been the best engineering decisions, but they were made at the top of the company and then driven down the stack, which is very, you know, Samsung Chaebol kind of, you know, culture. And so I think, you know, the one of the biggest stories of the year is that Samsung, you know, lost the lead in DRAM memory, in NAND memory. And they're falling even further behind TSMC and you know, Logic Foundry. So they've lost a lot of their technical competence that had them at the top of the world of the semiconductor industry, as well as, you know, generally in technology, and they've fallen behind in those regards. And, you know, they're still a massive company. They'll still be successful, but they're not quite the titan they were, you know, even a few years ago. And in China Talk, where Jordan hosts guests that talk about Korea, I just want to point out one other thing, which is, you know, the Samsung chairman sort of was in jail for drug abuse and he got put out, right? He got released. And so, you know, part of it is, you know, they sort of were in a state of paralysis or inaction, you know, making big bets. And now, you know, he's going through and saying, you know, trying to make some crazy acquisitions of companies. You know, at least they're hosting talks about this behind the doors. And then, you know, maybe that's why the cartel's broken. He's like, no, you know, I'm the chairman. We're going to take share because we're just going to keep spending instead of, you know, being in this happy cartel where everyone makes money.
So my number three was Intel. Pat came in February 2021 and, you know, basically through reading your two newsletters, I got a little excited. Maybe there was a pathway that we could have this, you know, real rejuvenation. And I think sort of your coverage has really convinced me that the prospects of that happening are a lot lower than maybe people had hoped for 2 years ago. So I'll leave the deep analysis to you guys. But what do you all think happened over the past 2 years?
I don't think what's happening now is actually his fault. To be very clear, right? The products they're releasing today, are, you know, technical debt from, you know, 16, 17, 18, not sort of what he's kicked off and what he's been able to change. You know, the only effect he would possibly have is, you know, morale and maybe, you know, exiting some businesses and, you know, sort of that sort of stuff. You know, the strategy of investing more in fabs, but, you know, the truth of the matter is, or like, this probably would have started happening in 2020, but then COVID happened. And so there was a huge surge in demand, at least for their actual business. So, you know, the business probably would have imploded in 21 if it weren't for, you know, PCs going crazy and data centers going crazy. But, you know, they've really, you know, to clear up, you know, all the technical debt on the process technology side, right, on you know, catch up to TSMC and Samsung, for example, right, that takes till 24 or 25. Right. That is regardless of what, you know, and that's optimistically if they execute. So, you know, it, you know, Intel's in a horrible place, and it's actually going to get worse next year. But the, you know, there's you know, there's still reasons to be hopeful. You know, how much of Uncle Sam's money can they get to tied to that point? And actually, you know, Europe's as well. But you know, we'll see. But I, you know, they're not in a good place, and you know, the effects of sort of the new management team aren't really fully felt on the technical products as much as they are the culture. Which there are positive and negative things about, you know, the new.
Great. Dylan, what's your number four?
So my next one would be, you know, China being the world leader in NAND process technology. So, you know, everybody focuses on logic process technology all the time, right? What's the smallest nanometer? What's 7 nanometer, 5 nanometer, 3 nanometer, so on and so forth. But, you know, just, you know, almost just as critical to the world is memory, right? And one of the two major types of memory, NAND. China has created and shipped the highest density NAND in the world, you know, full stop. That is retail purchasable today, which is YMTC's 232-layer NAND. And this isn't like, you know, oh, they stole technology, or, oh, they hired TSMC's, you know, head of R&D and did this, right? This is, yes, they did poach some folks, but actually most of this was, a lot of this was domestic effort, right? So, you know, people who will say, China can't catch up, China won't be able to catch up, not being able to purchase tools and sanctions withholding, they absolutely can catch up and exceed Western technology. Now, the yield isn't as good as some Western companies, or not Western, but, you know, Asian as well, non-Chinese companies like Japanese and Korean. So the yield isn't as good. You know, they still have to ramp it to a huge volume. But the fact that you can purchase this on the open market, people purchase it on the open market, done teardowns, founded in SSDs, is huge, right? You know, so it's just a testament to, you know, the semiconductor industry is not, you know, a brick wall. No, actually, they broke through that brick wall in places, and they will break through, you know, China will break through the brick wall in every place because they have amazing engineers.
Doug, number three, what do you got?
ARM is suing Qualcomm for the Nuvia licenses that they're using, and essentially saying that that is a breach of their contract and that they need to essentially renegotiate these contracts at a higher level. Dylan probably has the better, like, technical overview, but that's my gist, is essentially ARM is saying, no, that doesn't fly. You have to do another, you have to pay us more, essentially. And they want Qualcomm to pay them more, probably because Qualcomm is one of the largest users of ARM in the world. And what I think is really interesting about that is it's not just the Qualcomm and ARM. It's more about what is happening in the ARM ecosystem, because the ARM ecosystem is in kind of a weird place. It's been like a really awesome time for the ARM ecosystem whenever underneath SoftBank, because SoftBank was like, sure, reinvest in this business. Don't make any money. We want the ARM ecosystem to take over the world and do really good in data center. And then what happened is when SoftBank tried to sell ARM to NVIDIA, and then eventually, obviously, that deal went through, it kind of froze ARM's, like, in the entire ARM pipeline for like a year during a very critical time, especially for the data center. And when the deal fell through, they instantly had to lay off 15% of the people. When the deal was happening, they couldn't give any price raises. A lot of people left. Like, it put the future of ARM into the most flux it's been in a long time. And then the second it was over, ARM is like, okay, well, now we're going to have to be our own company. We're not making enough money for this. So they literally turn around and they go hit up one of their largest customers to get paid more. And so I think that really takes away from the spirit of the ARM ecosystem, and also kind of kills some of like the growth and potential momentum in the ecosystem itself. And I think that the ARM Qualcomm deal is actually a symptom of the malaise that is happening within the ARM ecosystem. And I think it makes me a little bit more bearish about the future. Now, to be clear, I think the Neoverse platform is going to be really well adopted. The hyperscalers are still in-housing their stuff. But the long-term viability of ARM feels more in doubt than it used to be. And I think RISC-V really does feel like it has a much better chance. And if you're on the fence about ARM versus RISC-V, the extortion there really pushes you to RISC-V. And I think that's one of the bigger things that happened this year, because it's like more industry level of like where ARM is at. And I think that's really interesting. It changed my view of the healthiness of the ARM ecosystem. I don't know about you guys. I would love to hear your take on it, Dylan, because I just thought it was interesting.
Sure. So, I mean, I could bore you with the technical details of the lawsuit. I went through all, you know, all of the filings and I made an article about each one of those. But that's not really relevant, right? It's, you know, what's important is, you know, which, as you mentioned, right, Arm needed to be profitable, needed to be a sustainable company to IPO. They can't be. Okay, how do they extract this money? Oh, by the way, you know, two of the three biggest companies out there using ARM technology, Apple and NVIDIA, have the best deals ever, right? NVIDIA has a 20-year deal and Apple deal terms are unknown, but they basically founded the company back in the Acorn computing days. Not exactly, but, you know, so they also have an amazing deal. So then, you know, who's next? Where do I get money from to fund this? And their whole thought process seemed to be, we own the smartphone market. Let's extract margin out of the smartphone market. We've given away technology for at cost, basically, for years. So a few things, right? You know, hey, start paying us more. They've been raising the royalty fees on cores and so on and so forth every generation. The next thing is they've been, you know, they're suing Qualcomm to try and make them, you know, go through what they probably are correct, right? They're legally probably are going to win this case or could win this case. But the damage is, you know, 4 years of lawsuit discovery, you know, every bad thing possible in the RISC-V ecosystem sort of accelerating so fast because of this. So, you know, they could, you know, they very likely could be correct in their lawsuit. They have the rights to do that. But, you know, the optics of it are so bad. And then, you know, they're doing some shady stuff, allegedly, very allegedly. People have only said this in person and no one else will put it in writing, but, you know, they're telling other customers of ARM CPUs in the mobile world that you have to license our GPU. They're telling, you know, which is gonna, you know, instead of using, you know, if you're not using your own, right. You can't use, you know, another company like Imaginations. You know, they're telling companies, you know, all sorts of very sketch things, if you will. You know, like, hey, OEMs, Qualcomm won't be able to sell you a chip in 2025 unless they sign this deal. So you might as well start using another customer, another ARM company. These sorts of things are being reverberated through the ecosystem. And it's like, you're really shooting yourself in the foot. I'm sure you'll extract a bit more money, but you're killing your long-term viability. Like, you know, I kind of want to shake like the CEO and be like, what are you doing? Like, explain to me your strategy.
ARM literally went from this like open ecosystem
where
it's like
the best vibes ever. Literally like the king, like the king of vibes was just like,
yes. Yeah. They went from like, hey, we're this open ecosystem. We're going to grow this beautiful garden, take over the world. It's going to be great. Come join us. All you have to pay is a small bit of royalty, but like, we're going to be so big, so profitable, so wonderful, so healthy, to like mobster breaking your kneecaps, you know, like, and like, The vibe shift was like 2.5-3 years, like, right? Like what a 180. And so that is just so interesting to me. So the Qualcomm ARM deal is like part of a bigger vibe shift that I think is really interesting, and one that I noted, like, I'm like, oh, what the heck, ARM? Like, things are not cool in this house anymore like it used to be. So that's why it's like my number three story. So
The other big thing in that is that all, you know, many of their best engineers have been leaving too, because of that pause in the NVIDIA sort of acquisition where they didn't do much raises, didn't do much stock comp, and now they're, you know, really clamping down on that to be a profitable company. So it's, yeah, like as Doug was explaining earlier, you know, the long term viability, right? You know, it is semiconductor, so, you know, all these people leaving, you know, and being replaced with maybe not as quality people or what have you, not going to affect anything for the next couple of years in technology, but, you know, 3 to 5 years from now, you'll be like, oh, wow, what the heck happened?
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, there was talk when ARM and NVIDIA was something that was going to happen, that this would be, you know, people would be scared of working with them because there wouldn't be like a firewall and people would be sort of worried about, you know, getting too in bed with NVIDIA. But we ended up in a different scenario where that didn't happen and you're still facing a lot of problems. You guys want to riff on the, I don't know if RISC-V made it on either of your lists, but let's talk a little bit about how it's been progressing in 2022.
So actually that was on my list. And I was just at the RISC-V conference all week. You know, it was great. There was a press.
What number, Dylan? This is important.
This is number two, I think. I can't count, so I'm not sure, but. You know, there's very few people there that weren't in the ecosystem, you know, in terms of press and media and so on and analysts. But it was an amazing thing to see, you know, so many different companies. You know, if you think about, you know, big CPU cores, there's four companies developing this with over $100 million raised and teams that have, you know, crazy pedigrees from you know, IBM days and SunSpark days all the way through to AMD and Intel sort of, and so on. And so ARM, you know, all of, you know, people that are, you know, there, you know, walking around, it was like half the people knew each other because they used to work at ARM or they worked at an ARM adjacent company. Like it was, it's actually ridiculous. There's, you know, the big numbers or taglines is there's 10 billion RISC-V cores shipped, you know, by the beginning part of this year, which, you know, you're like, where? Turns out, you know, in my phone, you probably have an Andes Bluetooth chip, which has like three. And I use a Qualcomm phone. Qualcomm's actually been using RISC-V as, you know, control and security and management and microcontroller, that kind of stuff for 3 years now. And so many other companies. Your Bluetooth headphones, if they're not Apple, they most likely have RISC-V in them. You know, it's so many random things like that, that is, you know, you don't know it, but it's there.
Hard drives. I mean, it's funny. I remember talking like 2 years ago to someone that the RISC-V Foundation paid to like do a market study. And I was like, I looked at his bull case. I'm like, where's like network effects in here? Cause like, I feel like this could go even better than what you're thinking. And he's like, yeah, maybe, I don't know. Like, we just kind of like did some linear stuff, but I mean, we're really, it's really been remarkable. Just how fast this has spread. And, you know, part of it is ARM struggles, but I think it was a collective action problem where you've just gotten more and more folks to buy in.
Well, my favorite part about this is like, talk about a vibe shift, you know, like it really does seem like RISC-V just like, I mean, there's been momentum and everyone's been talking about RISC-V. And like, to be clear, those 10 billion cores are definitely lower part of the value chain. So it is very like, a very small part of the market, but like it really does feel like the exponent of increase is really happening right now. And so this is semiconductors. In 3 to 5 years, all of a sudden, we're going to start to hear some big design changes that really kind of shift into RISC-V's favor. But all of this kind of is happening at the same time that ARM is imploding. So, or not imploding, but you know, like are facing challenges. So It's definitely a story. It's not on my top list, but I thought it was really interesting, and I love to hear the energy that's happening in the industry. So, and yeah, I'm jealous of you getting to go to the RISC-V summit, but it seems like it's really alive, and like people are designing there in a way that, you know, the x86 and ARM ecosystem aren't really seeing at all. So there's energy.
The one other thing I want to, you know, note is, you know, I was always in the camp of, oh, it's 10 years away. It's 10 years away from, you know, anything, you know, really like user facing, right? Think your smartphone, think a data center. There's going to be smartphone chips that release next year with RISC-V in China and the year after that in the rest of the world. And Android is completely going to be ported, and, you know, there's no problem with, you know, application compatibility in many, many, many cases. It's nuts. It's nuts how fast this is going to happen. There's a RISC-V core that is, you know, is taped out and it's going to ship next year, late next year, that is on the performance level of AMD's, you know, last generation Milan, right? So next generation is Genoa, last generation is Milan, which is, hey, by the way, you know, like two generations above what Intel's shipping today. So, you know, it's absurd and it's actually real. It's there. So it's, you know, it's so exciting. And I'm, you know, I went from it's the next decade to, yeah, it's going to be in smartphones and it's going to be in servers in 5 years.
Doug, number two.
My number two is the semiconductor cycle itself, because this cycle has been really fun for me, at least like student history, definitely like more on the business side of things. But this one is the realest cycle we've had since 2009, essentially. And 2009, like the demand dynamics were much worse. Obviously, we don't know, like we're still in this like, will they, won't they of like a global recession or not. But it definitely, this cycle has been really interesting. And obviously for me, the second biggest story of the year. I think this will be like, if you've been following the industry, the cycles have been getting better and better over time, as in like less intense, less crazy, less like massive over inventory, less supply driven. But like this cycle on the upside was extremely almost like, beautiful for in terms of demand, like the ultimate upcycle. And then we're not having like the ultimate down cycle, like this is not the 1990s, but we're having a meaningful down cycle, and obviously like not addressing the fact that this cycle is about as intense as or will probably be as intense as 09 without anywhere near the like end market intense like destruction. I think that makes it the number two the number two story of this year. And so yeah, the inventory cycle that we're currently going through, that is my number two story. So I feel like that's like almost a lame answer, but I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on it. Like it's a heckin' cycle, that's for sure.
Dylan, this is a you question, not a...
Oh, Jordan, you don't love the intricacies of inventory cycles? Okay. Fair enough. So I mean it's huge. The only, you know, the really interesting things to just see is like, you know, I wasn't, you know, actively investing in such in the back in the days following the semiconductor industry, but only from like a consumer standpoint of like, I like new GPUs, I like new CPUs. But, you know, back in the last cycle of 2009, 8. But, you know, what now when I look, you know, if I read history, if I look at articles, the vibe difference, right? You know, so the word of the podcast is vibes, is, you know, it went from like shortage to like, oh, surplus. Right. Like in snap of a finger. Right. Yeah, I mean,
instantly.
You know, Rog and I, maybe we were screaming it for a little bit just because we follow the stocks and such. But like most people, you know, I still got people in the industry or engineers that are like, oh, it's still a shortage. I'm like, no, dude, there is no shortage, buddy. There is a little bit. But, you know, it's you know, you still see some people, you know, today asking about shortage. And then your uncle will also, who was asking you about the shortage, now ask you about the surplus. And if you should sell all the stocks, you know. Yeah, so these sorts of crazy things. I think it's a hilarious shift in the general public.
Hey there, China Talk listeners. This is Tracy Alloway.
And I'm Jill Weisenthal, and we are the co-hosts of Bloomberg's Odd Lots podcast.
Yep, and if you enjoy China Talk, we think that you'll like Odd Lots too.
We have engaging conversations on everything from semiconductors to trade to AI to macroeconomic policy, and we always have the perfect guest.
Yep, you can check us out at Oddlots on all the podcast platforms or bloomberg.com/Oddlots.
So one question for both of you guys is like, you know, in 2020, 2021, we had these enormous, and you know, first half of 2022 even, we had these enormous announcements of CapEx from the major manufacturers around the world in both memory and logic. What's going to happen to those numbers in the coming years?
They're going down. So I'll start first, I guess. It's like, so the CapEx that got delivered in 2020 and 2021 is still being like, I mean, I wouldn't say still being deployed, but it's still, the supply is still coming online. And utilization essentially was at the highest it's ever been in the entire history of the semiconductor industry. So yes, the up cycle was really intense and it was longer than average as well. The down cycle itself, one of the things that's really interesting is if you look at the 2018 cycle in memory, it was really tepid. And I think that many investors, myself included, had a belief that because of the memory oligopoly, things would be a little like chiller from here, if that makes sense. And now we're after like two quarters of like down 30% pricing or something like that. We're like, oh no, this is still just as intense as it used to be. And I really feel like that kind of has broken the belief of cyclicality getting a little better, and maybe this cycle's down is mostly because of how up it was, you know. And putting that into context will maybe alleviate how ridiculously cyclical it is, or like make you appreciate the down cycle. But yeah, what's also weird is, you know, even right now we're talking about an over inventory. There are still segments of the industry that is in undersupply, where it's like we cannot get enough 8-bit MCUs, and maybe that's. Maybe if because I only did four, I'm going to actually insert one. Like, I feel like the leading edge aspect of this cycle is really interesting, where the leading edge became really, really sexy again and really needed and underinvested. And that is something that's definitely changed. For example, this entire inventory correction is mostly happening on like the leading edge, but there are still some stuff in the lagging edge, which is like these really old, like 100 nanometer chips that are just completely out of demand or like out of supply. They're like, still, even now, they're like, yeah, we still can't get enough of these. So I think that's really interesting and something that's different. So Dylan, we'd love to hear your takes on that.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the same page here, although, you know, it's going to go down. I mean, it is already going down, right? And this was, you know, alluding to number four, where kind of pointed this out a few weeks ago as well. You know, Samsung is blowing up the memory oligopoly. Everyone else is cutting. You know, Micron said, we're going to cut our equipment by 50%. SK Hynix said, you know, similar stuff. And then Samsung's like, we're going to increase it. Screw it. So the kind of leads into number one, which is, yes, it's going to be down. It has to be down. You know, the politicalization of the semiconductor industry means that, you know, there are subsidies and there is going to be spending, right? And so, you know, it might not be down as much as we think.
Okay, so before we get into that, I have to say my semiconductor cycle story. So my grandfather ran a trade magazine for the industry in the 50s and 60s. And the sort of family lore was that he would, like, you know, when the cycle was down, he would let, you know, all the U.S. firms buy ads on loan. It was that bad, and they would like hit it. They would like hit him back with like 2x, you know, 6 months or a year or 2 years later. So, Doug, this absolutely has been something going on for, you know, generations now, and it's hysterical that you know, demand forecasting is still 2-7 years later, like, you know, as far from a science as you can imagine.
It's better, to be clear. It is so much better. I have been doing a lot of history work this last year, just like, obviously, just like trying to get context of cycles. And like, man, some of the cycles back in the day, you're like, what the hell is going on? Like, I think the late 90s, like the 97 cycle for memory was insane. Like, I think they had a 70% drawdown and then like another 20%. So like memory pricing went down like 85%. Like, how do you plan a business on that? And while the pricing is going down, they're increasing supply the entire time. You're like, what the heck is happening? So the context of history makes you appreciate how much better this is. But yes, it is still cyclical, and it will probably always be still cyclical. So, but yeah, it's been really crazy. But I guess that's also what makes it fun to cover the industry, at least for me, for the business perspective. Like, you know, there's always something going on. You have to pay attention. So,
Dylan, your number one is also my number one. I don't know if like CHIPS Act export controls, I think, is kind of like two sides of the same coin.
I think there's a third. Yeah, there's a third one in there that I was going to lead this off with, which is, you know, I think, and I can only, you know, guess, but I think this is what finally got the U.S. to be like, oh, crap, which was a SMIC 7 nanometer. And, you know, maybe if you look at the exact technical specifications, it's more like an A. You know, but, you know, anyways, it's really, really cool and amazing that they were able to achieve that. And so, you know, I think that might be what lit the fire of actually, you know, partially the CHIPS Act, because, you know, one day Chuck Schumer said SMIC achieved 7 nanometer, on the Capitol Hill, and he cited Bloomberg instead of my article, which posted it first, but, you know, I'm not salty. and then, you know, the CHIPS Act passed, and then, you know, the sanctions came down. And so, you know, all of this stuff, you know, you can give the background, but I think that's sort of almost the big lead up to it all.
Yeah. That's my number one too, by the way, like essentially this whole, thing, like the, yeah, it's number one.
So, I mean, the sort of confluence of forces that led to the CHIPS Act and the export controls, I think you can expand it. I think the SMIC 7 nanometer story was enormous. And there's also been reporting subsequent that this was something that really helped get the ball moving in the interagency with regards to export controls. You had the chip shortage, right? Which was something which, like, you know, think just like got in like COVID and supply chains in general, which like the line wasn't like very clear to like the CHIPS Act being something to solve that, but I think it was a it was just like something in the atmosphere that led sort of voters and their representatives to be more amenable to this sort of stuff. And of course you just had Taiwan tension and the fear of something happening setting us back, you know, not to the Stone Age, but like decades in terms of where, you know, what our lives would look like without access to the Taiwanese semiconductor ecosystem. I woke a lot of people up as U.S.-China relations really fell off a cliff over the past few years. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about it a lot this year on the podcast. But Dylan, Doug, other sort of thoughts, reflections on and sort of what this means for the future of the industry?
I think, you know, the biggest headline is it's not limited to the semiconductor industry. It's not limited to AI. This is, you know, in my opinion, this is now economic war, economic cold war. You know, there's a decoupling and so on and so forth. I mean, even today, there were new sanctions, you know, that we didn't have the chance to, you know, dig through fully deeply yet, you know, but I'm sure Jordan will go through them. I'm sure Doug will go through them and I'll go through them. But, you know, there's, you know, it's the start of, you know, more and more and more escalation. I think that is the biggest, you know, chip year in review. Now, this is just like the world economy year in review. The decoupling is real. I mean, maybe you could argue it started with Huawei, but now it's like China, you cannot have lithography tools. China, you cannot have deposition tools. China, you cannot have AI chips. Oh, by the way, this is everything that the economy is going to be, you know, of economic growth, future of it. A lot of it is that. So, you know, it's a straight up, you know, cold war now. And so that's my biggest, you know, takeaway from this year.
So we're recording this on December 15th. And just a few days ago, or I guess yesterday, Reuters reported that, you know, China was considering $132 billion subsidy program for its domestic ecosystem. So, you know, it's not like either side is going to be putting the knives away anytime soon, because this is downstream of the political relationship, which, you know, is a function of sort of where Xi has been, where he's likely to go, which is A, nowhere, and B, to dark places. And sort of the response to the response that you're seeing both in the U.S. and around the world to the directions that she's led his country in the past decade. So I'm pessimistic. You know, we had Alan Estevez in an interview late this year when asked by Martin Rasser of CNAS, like, what are you guys considering doing this for other technologies? And he goes, yeah, we meet every week talking about this. So, you know, it's not just chips. It's, you know, has the potential to spread to every, you know, quote unquote, force multiplying technology that's going to be coming down the pipeline. And, you know, we're also looking at a presidential election in 2024 where, you know, this stuff could be turned up another notch by having a Republican in the White House. So
you heard it here first on China Talk, because the plow is the biggest force multiplier of human productivity in history, it might be sanctioned.
Oh my God, that would be great. So I was going to say, definitely we started with Huawei. I feel like that was the prologue to what this, like, well, I'm going to keep using the vibes word, okay? The vibes were bad. They're definitely way worse now. And now I would say, yeah, we hit the, like, this is economic war as a vibe. But I think when we look back in history, we can definitely point out to 2022 as being the year it really all began, like the delineation between the supply chains, the thought process that, hey, both of these countries are going to have completely separate supply chains. They already have separate internets, right? Like, in many ways, the cultures, like by not being able to even interact with each other directly, like, we've been pulling away from each other for a long time. And I think that is definitely the biggest story. It's bigger than semiconductors, but I feel like it percolated up through semiconductors. And you're talking about other industries. I think they're doing a call for essentially a CHIPS Act version for like the biopharma industry. So like, which is another obviously huge force multiplier for the future. So they're thinking about this, and this is just going to continue. Like, there's no way, like, this trend is huge, getting bigger. So yeah, the biggest story of 2022 for sure. There's no way it couldn't be.
What else do we do? We didn't really argue. You're supposed to like argue on these shows.
Oh,
so
you're wrong,
tell me,
Dylan.
Why the U.S. shouldn't ban the plow? Tell me, it's the biggest force multiplier.
You know what's funny is they probably. I mean, who knows, man? Maybe they'll ban some like tractors or something. Like,
but Dylan's being facetious. But when you talked. Former Trump official, they say we shouldn't trade with China. Like, this is not like a completely fringe view that, you know, anything, any sort of like financial commercial arrangement between the US and China, for some people in the sort of, you know, not super fringe American political universe, think that like that's just the answer. And it's, you know, once the sort of like stage has been set. And once you accept the logic that Jake Sullivan laid out in his September speech, then it's hard to sort of draw the line of like actually where the break is, because I think sort of more and more industries are going to try to play the cards that that the semiconductor industry did, as Dylan said, with like, look, you know, okay, our thing is super strategic. It's going to change the world. Like, you need to win the future. You need to win the thing that we're doing. So please give us a lot of money and, don't make it too hard for us to sell to China, but like, this is the deal. And, we're going to need to be compensated for the, for the cut in market share that you're going to be inflicting on us.
American industries want to eat their cake or have their cake and eat it too, or something like that, right? Yeah. Like they want the subsidy plus the ability to sell to China conditionally until obviously we don't have to anymore. I feel like that's the hard part is like these are bitter pills to swallow because American industry interests are definitely always going to protect the profit pool. But like that's just in their incentives. But over a very long period of time, it does feel like most of the businesses that are at risk that are being done in China are at risk. So that's like a big takeaway for me, at least. I think if you're an investor thinking about investing in China, you should definitely consider about how terrifying it is that they're trying to we're doing economic war and cannon fodder is probably the financial flows between the two countries. So that's something I'm very cognizant of and thinking about often is like, if there is a linkage, it should be discounted or maybe considered at risk, like in any way, shape, and form. I mean, that's just how this is going if we're doing economic war. So
Jordan said ban plows. Doug said we're going to short every U.S. listed Chinese company. There we go.
Buddy, I am not against that.
I want to ban plows. I just said the logic goes there. But
so no, ban plows.
I'm sorry, I love to troll. So
Jordan Schneider, ban plows.
What is Bill Bishop? He says the aggregators. Don't aggregate me. I didn't say ban plows. Okay. What else? Anything you're looking forward to next year?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm looking for the semiconductors to stop sucking. I think if you look at it as a student of history, cycles usually end relatively quickly. So I'm very interested in the semiconductor cycle. I'm interested in technology inflections. I think there's a lot of interesting things coming up. I'm interested in just better vibes in general and crushing inflation and getting back to this great old America economy instead of an energy crisis and all this stuff. Maybe a little bit of like normalization, it'll be cool to have a few boring years.
I'm looking forward to being able to go to Japan and Taiwan. I want to move there 3 months apiece. If those of you don't know me, I'm a digital nomad and I've sort of done that in North America, a bit in South America, but I want to go to Asia, and I want to live in Taiwan and I want to see the Chinese planes flying over and so on and so forth. Right.
All right. Well, we'll have some sort of, I know we got listeners out there. We'll have some China Talk meetups in absentia. Or who knows? Maybe I'll make it to Asia in 2023. Fingers crossed. Doug. So last thing. So at the end of Chips Avengers, we tried to have we tried to find a chips wrap, which we couldn't do. But in between now and then, ChatGPT exists. So we are going to live ask to make some bars and you will hear me rap.
Oh, thank God.
I was worried that Doug was going to do it. So that's good. That's not him.
For a holiday surprise. Okay. So which rapper do you, what style of rapper do you want our lines of?
Snoop Dogg. Of course,
Snoop Dogg. Rap about lyrics, song about. Okay. So which song? It's better when it does to the tune of
Drop It Like It's Hot.
Okay. God, this is terrible. Is this the most embarrassing thing I've done on this podcast? I think so.
I believe in higher highs for you, man. Next year, you have so many more embarrassing opportunities.
It's still loading.
They need to buy more.
This is so good. it, it, it got a little confused because it's like, it's not all Drop It Like It's Hot. There's like kind of like influences from other Snoop Dogg songs, but
just do it until it's bad.
Okay, say Snoop Dogg in the house and I'm coming real snicks, talking about semiconductors, baby, get with it. Silicon and germanium, they make my flow sick. Electrons moving like they supposed to, they don't miss. Drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot. Semiconductors keeping it popping, never gonna stop. Drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot. Powering up my circuits, baby, make them voltage drop. P-type, N-type, they make a perfect pair. Connected together, they make a transistor, yeah. Amplifying signal, switching on and off. Semiconductors, baby, they never gonna flop. Drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot. Semiconductors keep it popping, never gonna stop. Okay, the chorus is bad.
Okay.
Verse number three.
So fire.
Computer chips and microprocessors, they run the show. Semiconductors making things go, they make it grow. From smartphones to laptop, they make it all work. Semiconductors, baby, they never gonna shirk.
Dude,
drop it like
amazing.
It's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Powering up my circuits, baby. Make them voltage drop. Happy New Year.
Dude, the make the voltage drop. I was like, that is so fire. P and N transistors. Oh, man.
The beginning was just, oh, my goodness.
It's talking about silicon germanium and silicon epitaxy, dude. Come on.
And like, yeah. And it's like in like increase the flow of my electrons. I'm like, yo, dude, this is fire. Oh my God. That was really good.
Do we have to do another one?
No.
We can't do another one.
Well, the other thing too is for you, man. You have content till Kingdom Come. ChatGPT. A new rap every single time.
Is that your
oh,
new
man.
Your
that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Whoever you have on your podcast has to make
I'm gonna do a ChatGPT rap. Oh my God. If this is my new shtick, I'm so ready for it.
It's good. It's a great shtick, dude. It's a great shtick. I'm about it.
Okay.
So congratulations. AI wins.
Happy New Year. Subscribe to Chat Talk. Subscribe to Transistor Radio. Subscribe to Semi Analysis. Subscribe to Fabricated Knowledge, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whoa. Don't waste too much money already.
Whoa, you tell me. Talk about Dylan, dude. Anyways, thank you so much for coming out. It was fun.
Okay. Kiss back. No cap, no cap. It's that. Freak ass, freak ass. Kiss back. No cap, no cap. It's that. Freak ass, freak ass. 最近脑子也许是空洞, 什么时候, I don't fucking know, bro. 因为玩的越久越是变得懵懂, 听到一些 tracks, 看到别人变得有肉, 都没有挂断, 如果能被加班, 时间太短, 听众朋友需要发展, who's your style, who's your camera, flow my way, 就是完整大多, 谁要高举的我的位, 一些孤单音乐的人接触我是 在乎美让我不想买美人跑歌也放过弄脏我的office gallery Left school 就是你们用去窥探所有混世界都是心理精神溃烂这五门退散生活结果摧残和路边围剿流行的核武最一个内战手机刷台就会阴谋着无联网采取了谁都逃不过披头从迷战我要见面心中隐藏的智能滚中不是把我给踢走是暴风要来临的机油就自不仅挂起了地表还记住了地球能让我举悲剧的猎物真正干裂的歌词要做球那个男人裤子 Bruce 真的无法复制 Bruce Lee 没有我的管他大小心我这张肚子 Kiss back No cap It's that Fake ass Kiss back No cap花几句箱子是不是有 再不是我的title 两只鸡的争取能力怪兽 See you next level Long time no see home 又是自闭的 Move with speed 和 地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气地气
不见松子心里流失重声音黑的多不能再出失重的心理大多数的观众他们也会终极清醒逃离空旷井底共筑心境污染过的耳朵让为你送上行李 AOE 鼻子来源就是 fake no plea 眼光是在我背后 this 最后不必 take your knees 这样用着一起背 hey baby 为这次放马回 wait great 让所有敌人 pay for me 那颗 make more beef 那你就算了